and try again.
This is the Project Black Sky podcast, the official podcast of the Project Black Sky fan page. In each episode, we will delve into Dark Horse's shared world, issue by issue, to better understand who, if not us. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of the Project Black Sky podcast. My name is Moise, and here is my co-host,
Jadobi.
We're going to start with the first occultist one-shot, because I feel that this is the beginning of the universe, even though it's shown to be... The first cover is shown to be in conjunction with the... What was the Robot Hunter's name again? Magmus? Do you recall that?
Yeah.
And
that would be his name.
And Dr. Solar. So what's interesting is that they were going to be in the same universe, but all of a sudden that seemed to have faded away, and the occultists became the jumping point for the new Project Black Sky. We have the first issue, which is the Occultist, created by Mike Richardson and written by Tom Seeley. The art is done by Victor Druzhinyu. Can you say that name? Do you know how to say that name?
Let's see.
Druzhinyu?
I'm gonna assume the second I is silent.
And also by Jason Gorder, and colored by Andrew Dow. I think it's Dowhousie, but that's only how they say it in Nova Scotia up here. Also, there's an alternate cover, which is I really like the cover too. I wish I had it by Guy Davis, but the main cover is done by Steve Morris. So, not going into spoilers right off the beginning, what did you think about this first issue?
I thought that this one was very good. I mean, we're kind of seeing it's an origin story for Rob. He's kind of a hero of circumstance, so to speak. We get an idea of...
Well, he had no idea that he was going for it.
Nope, not at all. We get an idea of who he is, what this power is, who this person is that's going to be after him. It's a whole lot of setup that's very good for a one-shot like this that leads into big mystery behind this power that he mysteriously acquires. It's fun because you want to see what this pseudo supernatural hero has to offer in a world like Dark Horse, because we've seen everything. We haven't even got into everything that's like a ghost, an inventor. But you just wonder how something like this really fits into a world that's just coming into the impossible and the unknown.
Well, I've been a huge fan of the occult, and in comic books form especially, like the old issues of Phantom Stranger back from in that other series. But I like the fact that, especially how Tim Seeley says it, it's sort of like how... What if Peter Parker became Doctor Strange, which is a beautiful way to go into the series to think about this, because when Peter Parker first became Spider-Man, he had no idea what his powers were all about, and he's just a kid dealing with everything else going on, and it's nice to see what would happen if magic was in play, because with magic you have no idea what's going to happen to you. You never know how it's going to affect you and what is out there that is in the magic realm. It's nice to see more so, especially in this Project Black Sky universe, that magic does take place. It's not all science based. Sort of keeps the wonder and fantasy in the comic book. So, how would you rate this? Giving it like a percentage of on 100, how would you what number would you give that?
I've been trying to consider this one for a while.
Same here.
I think I'd have to probably go for 80 out of 100.
Oh, 80 out of 100. Yes, yeah. See, I was I kind of I agree with you. The story wise, it's good. Although I have to go a little bit lower with that, because the art I find has its inconsistencies, especially in the facial
It
features.
does.
Proportion doesn't really seem well. Although it doesn't take me. It's not enough to take me out of the story, which is good, because some comic books with some artists, it tends to break the comic book. But here, the story also keeps the story very much alive. And mind you, there are some really good money shots. When, for instance, when he first gets the information from the book, and it shows all the past swords that carry the book. I'm a big fan, big fan of that one. And I really like the way that the character of the old man is drawn, Mr. Elder.
Definitely. I definitely liked like all the special effects, like as you said, seeing the past carriers, then seeing how they use the different lighting, especially the green glowing off of his hand. That can actually show these monsters' true faces, show what it is that Rob is doing, especially when he puts on the cloak and kind of shrouded himself from these, try not to go into spoilers.
Well, no, we'll get into that
Yeah.
eventually, soon enough. Not to worry. But the magical beings, because we are in a world of magic, so the
Yeah,
antagonists,
the
we'll call them.
antagonists. Yep.
I completely agree. I actually really like the fact that the, like you said, the special effects of the green, it really adds to dynamic to and shows how he is a weapon, as the book refers to him as a sword, because even though these magical antagonists are coming after him, it still takes care of the situation, which is nice. So it shows that there is a great power within this that we don't even know about, let alone our main character knows about. So I give this overall, I would give this a 70, 76%, I think. Maybe actually 77, I think, is a good number to begin with.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
So, do you have your comic book in front of you?
Yep, I got it.
Excellent. We begin with Casa de Estrellas Resort, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we see that we have a boardroom. Actually, I just want to explain one thing just to begin. The spoilers, I feel that Sarah areas for those people that actually don't have the means of getting the comic book. Or can't afford the comic book, but still want to take part in the whole Project Black Sky shared world, and so that's why the spoiler section is. So those people who have yet to buy it and don't want, they just want, a general opinion, make sure to stop now. So that brings us back to Casa del Estrella's Resort for those of us who stayed. It's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we find ourselves with Aiden Beck. He's an interesting tattooed, very GQ styled, how would you call him, motivational speaker.
Yep.
He's doing a presentation in a boardroom for Megatech, and we see a large screen that says "Imagine," period, "Will," period, "Actualize," period. Very, very key words in success and business. Although the people at the show, even though they applaud his performance, they kind of are doubtful with what he has to offer, so to speak. They think he's kind of like how would you call him a show, I guess.
Pretty much. I mean,
But he it turns out he's not actually a show. He the next page, as we turn around, he borrows someone's cell phone and breaks it, and as it's in the sink in the washroom, he touches it and makes a phone call. So that I like that air of mystery of who this guy is, like why he's what his actions are.
Initially reading that, I know that really caught me off guard because you see, because you obviously expect him to also be a magical being, and then you see him, and just makes you wonder exactly what it is that, I mean, it makes sense when you're looking at the type of profession he has, and then how that is also adapted into what he's able to do, with this phone, and I think that that's
It's
very
modern day
unique.
magic.
Yep, modern day
Yeah.
magic.
Actually, they give reference to that later on. He's was it a technomancy? Great title. Whoever came with the up with that's amazing.
Yep, because you don't expect that from a shaman.
No, you don't at all. No, it's an interesting dynamic to actually bring that into the modern day world. So it's fresh. I actually really enjoyed that. And I'm actually kind of creeping my score up to 78% success. So we bring ourselves into Plymouth, New Hampshire, which is the campus of Plymouth State University, and instantly we're thrown into drama of the adolescent sort relationship. Valerie is leaving our main character, Rob. Apparently, he's not the best kind of boyfriend, so to speak. She wants more. She wants more than just a person who's, goes to school, goes to work, and sleeps and plays games. Which is understandable, I think there's although mind you that it turns out that she has some valid points.
She does.
She does, and especially with the fact that he's definitely a mama's boy. And of course, ironically enough, who happens to call, which is his mother, so he puts the conversation on hold as Valerie walks away. Now, the mother is an interesting character. I kind of like her. She's a big what do you a faithful woman?
Yep, the conflict of interest.
Yes. I would say very much Roman Catholic. I actually grew up Roman Catholic, so but I don't know if you noticed this, but next to the phone there's this one cross that actually spells the word Jesus. So and the mother not liking the girlfriend thinks that she's evil, and he's not so sure. He's trying to explain to her, and of course that he loves her and such, or it's just a girl. And as he moves to the telescope to look around, he sees her waiting, and who happens to meet up with another guy.
Boom.
Yeah, maybe his mother was right.
Yep.
So, but it's interesting to I like the fact that even though after reading everything up to date, the mother doesn't really play into it, but I like the aspect of how the mother can lay in future store groundwork because she's super superstitious religious, I think would be the best way to say it.
So you definitely want to see just how he handles being
What she would consider evil.
yep, and just how long he can actually keep that second life from her.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes a better dynamic, like going back on the Spider-Man element. It becomes more thicker or stickier situation, as opposed to just saying, "Hi, I'm Spider-Man." This now she's saying now he has to say, "Hi, I'm a wizard," or
The
that could probably even kill her,
Grieve.
Sorry?
Oh,
Say again?
I just said Grim Reaper.
Yeah, exactly, the Grim Reaper. So, speaking of something that's fairly grim, it brings us to the Elder Rare Books bookstore, which happens to be Rob Bailey's job. We find ourselves at Elder Books, and this is one of the best characters in the book. I think this guy is great, and the color of his Hawaiian shirt really shows who he is, Mr. Elder. What do you think of this guy?
I think he's good. He's a great character to have around because he comes off as that guardian or father figure that he somewhat needs. Not between his. No, I'm going a bit too far ahead. Okay, yeah. Well, actually, I'm just gonna stick to what's happening right now.
Spoilers for the
He comes
spoilers.
off as that father figure or guardian that Rob needs to give him a little bit of direction.
Well, he reminds me very much of like have you ever seen the Never Ending Story movie?
Yep.
You remember the guy from the old bookstore? Very much seems like that, but more spry and childlike.
Definitely.
It's sort of like if that old man met up with Stan Lee.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's pretty much how he is. It's fun to see how you have Rob, who's a bit more serious, and he's a little more laid back, except for what's going on with the book.
Especially like the goings-ons of the book, like the fact that he left it in his office and it magically appeared back on the table. Rob opens that. He's actually very. I love the art in this face right here, where he's like, "Don't open that!" he exclaims, and he actually looks really worried there. Quite impressed with that facial feature. Takes the book back and bam, right back up. Now this is where it gets exciting, where the book actually speaks to Rob. Telling it to free us, and without his control, it just lifts up off the desk, unwraps itself, and flies into his hand. And that's when the connection is made. This is the pinnacle moment where he becomes the sword. The sword chooses to wield the man. The man does not choose to wield the sword. How cool is that?
I mean,
As an origin story.
it would have been very cool if he did get a staff like these other guys.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I didn't even notice that. Where is the staff? Maybe he has to go find it, because it seems they all carry the same wooden staff.
Yep. I mean, that's what I'm hoping.
Oh, that'd be an interesting plot point, eh? What would happen if he actually wielded that as well?
It might amplify his powers.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Who knows? Oh, it's juicy. Actually, of all the Project Black Sky characters, this is the one I feel that I'm getting the most withdrawal from. Like, I need more of them. It's been a while. And I'm really excited on
A long while.
who he is. Yes, exactly. A long while. In fact, this book came out 4 years ago. Or nearing it. Next month will be 4 years. So, then finally the book closes itself, wraps itself back up, and out comes Mr. Elder, looking for the book again. And enter the antagonists. Now, what do you think of these guys?
Definitely a bit cliche. You have the three stooges that come to pick it up, but of course, off the bat, you see there's a little something more to them when they have these trinkets around their neck. Being
Yeah, that
sent
catches your
by,
eye right away.
yep. And knowing who they were sent by, they're packing a little more than just guns.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Because the eyes are instantly drawn to what's around their necks. There's something special, peculiar. And, like, of course, it has something to do with magic, obviously. That kind of sets the groundwork. So, these interesting characters are like, we're here to pick up the book. And Mr. Elders, of course, I'm going to give you the book, just right here. But all of a sudden, the hand glows green, like you're saying. Now, what's interesting is that in this panel, you see the sword symbol is in the hand. So that hand, the hand itself is the sword, which is great.
Yep.
Or well, it, of course, you know, Rob Bailey is the sword, but it really shows him wielding it. I really like that little touch. And so these creatures all of a sudden, or these thugs, all of a sudden realize that this is very bad. So they try to get to him, and unfortunately, Mr. Elder's in the way. And with that large crack onomatopoeia, nothing good happened from that.
Nope.
Nothing good at all. So.
It was fast, sad, depressing, but yep, it happens.
You know, and I'm actually glad that it was, like you said, fast, because it even though it moved the story along right away, which is always good in a story, in a comic book, it's sometimes life happens that way when there's someone in between. It just, you don't even realize it.
Yep, especially when those three are kind of charging at you like Gollum looking for his ring.
Yeah, exactly. Good, exactly. So now what's interesting is that they say weird things. This is where it started to get really strange for me. It's like he's where Rob Bailey yells out, "Mr. Elder," so you know something's up. And he says he's gone now to the great cornfield, says one of the thugs, which is a weird thing to say. "No scarecrows there," says another. So there's something really strange about this. And of course, as Rob Bailey uses his magic hand, it reveals the book inside of him tells him to reveal the true forms. Now, what's cool about this, I just like I would like to hear your thoughts on these true forms, but I like just want to mention I like the fact that the book is teaching him how to use it. It's not like he's left to his own devices. It's like basically showing him and guiding him through along the way. So big fan of that. But here are the big the big reveal that these are magical creatures.
What I like about this is that going back to the whole Doctor Strange comparison, and it's awesome because with the book it's teaching it's not only teaching Rob, it's also teaching us a lot of this stuff too, because you're also looking at this as if it's a history lesson. The book has knowledge on all of these creatures, and it's definitely exciting because you want to see the extent of information that this book can hold, and let alone how Rob can process all of this. I mean, that's definitely something you don't expect to see every day.
Well, and the best part about this is that, as many stories are, that usually the main character is the one that brings the audience along with the ride. So with Rob Bailey not knowing anything, we go along with him with an open mind, open eye for adventure, such, because we don't know what's going to happen, as he doesn't know what's going to happen. Yeah, and we learn as we go.
And the book gives us a little more in-depth knowledge of what's actually happening or what we're actually seeing.
And what's interesting too is that, as you say, as we're seeing, it says reveal your true forms, and it shows these creatures. Now, I think at this moment, like, the reason why the book needed to do that is to know who these creatures are, as they were camouflaged into human form, or as we find out, just wearing the skin. So we go back to Los Angeles, and we see that we can see through a laptop that Aiden Beck is looking through. We can actually see what's going on in the Elder bookstore. If you notice that there's a knife on the carpet and also some blood running down his leg. So again, we have the technomancy at play. One thing I like too is that if you notice in the computer screen, it shows one sword and two what can be best described as bird-like creatures for icons, sort of like as a game would be being played.
I did not
Did you
notice
notice
that till
that?
now.
Isn't that cool?
Really is.
So we have Aiden Beck all glowy tattooed, watching the scenario, actually talking to these creatures. And if once you turn the page, we realize that they are actually creatures, crow-like creatures, crow spirits, Tulpe Corvus, thought forms actualized and conjured by a powerful shaman. And that powerful shaman is the Technomancer, Aiden Beck. Now, the Aiden Beck actually puts a bigger bounty on Rob Bailey's head, so to speak. He says to the three that one of them will be rewarded. Which is interesting because it makes it kind of turn on on themselves, as usually bites them in the end. The book teaches teaches Rob Bailey about the creature. The Tolpe Corvus love to enter the physical realm and are fascinated by physical objects, specifically those that are shiny or metallic, which explains why they have all these necklaces around their necks and such. They're fascinated by the jewelry. It says that also that the spirit form is unable to sustain itself in Earth realm, so it must reside within a recently dead physical entity, which also explains earlier on that they mentioned, I think it was earlier on, that before Mr. Elder died, where they said, "Aged human, your skin is r cracked, wrinkled, useless," and that's when they killed him. So that actually clarifies why what happened at that moment. And it also says that they have keen eyesight, so in the invisible light spectrum, they have thermographic vision, so of course, handily, the lights go out.
Yep.
Now, this is the one part of the story that actually lowered my score quite a bit. Why is there a clothing rack of robes in a bookstore?
Yeah, it does feel kind of convenient.
A bit contrived. No, I kind of like I kind of tell myself maybe it's because Mr. Elder was a wizard. Maybe we don't know that. We have no idea. But I don't know. That does it take you out of the story as much as it did for myself, or?
It didn't take me out of the story at first, though hearing it now, it sort of does, because it makes you start to overthink more than you really should,
Yeah,
because I
I tend
know
to do
kind
that.
of because first you have him stumbling across this robe, and then you start to wonder, okay, well, how does he get the rest of his little ensemble later on? It just
Well, I understand the fact that he can make a robe, a wizard's robe. That's completely understandable, as the book explained to him. It's just the fact that there were robes there. Like, I can see like any type of wardrobe being a wizard magical wardrobe. So anyways, this wizard's robe allows him to hide from the vision of the crows. Unfortunately, being a klutz, so to speak, or in the dark, which would be a better way to put it, he trips over a power plug and falls. They notice that he's there and he runs out, and of course they pounce upon him. When they do, they finally knock him down, which was a great action sequence. I loved the art in these next few pages. Really did. But of course, because the bounty was put on for his head for one successor, they fight amongst themselves. "I caught him. I'll keep him. I'll keep his body, but I helped. We killed him together." So as they're distracted, the sword lets them know how to defeat him. And as he utters the spell that he's never uttered before, the crow spirits burst up in flame. And all that's left is a pile of bone and a little bit of blood and the book. Which brings us to him standing in the alleyway by himself, or so it seems, because there's Jacob Elder. Telling him, "Sometimes, Rob, our intentions are good, but maybe not right, but good. But everything just seems to go wrong." Such a great ominous feeling that brings us into this the ending of this book here. And as he says this, he's like, "Mr. Elder, you're okay." And he's like, "Okay, Robert, I'm not okay." And as he walks through the wall, he says, "I'm dead." And What a great picture of the occultist standing in a pile of bones with a glowing green hand.
It's certainly a bit depressing because he just kind of leaves him, almost abandons him. I mean, at this point, you kind of do feel like it is Rob's. I mean, you don't want to say it's Rob's fault. You do want to say it's Rob's fault because he got a little bit curious, but the book did choose him, and then
Yes.
that led to Mr. Elder's death. So you kind of feel conflicted as to who as to how you should be feeling about him leaving Rob and what happened and what's going on with Rob and where Rob goes from here.
It's a very valid point because the book did choose him. He didn't even open the book. It unraveled in front of him. He had nothing to do with it. So it's very dark and ominous, but I think that's a great way to start off a story because it's sort of like the young adventurer can't look back. He can only go forward, and everything has changed. It's such a, I think it's a great jumping off point. Back to his place, he's winding down. We realize that the book is completely blank. All the writing is in him, which is great. Love that. Love that emotional visual, so to speak. He starts to figure out that, this is probably a lot that he can handle. He puts a glove on his hand, and of course, the magic goes through the glove. His glove glows green, which is great. We see the setups for him dealing with his mother and him dealing with his life, and realize that he can actually use a love spell. So I like the temptation of getting his girlfriend Valerie back.
Which can only go so wrong, and we can and we it's going to go wrong. There's
When
no
does it ever go
question.
right?
Yep.
It's a beautiful setup. The last page, or like the after credits scene you would find in a movie. If this was the occultist number one, or even just the occultist number zero, I would love this last page because it sets it up for what's going to happen. Like we know that there's going to be a big storm going to be happening. But because it says one shot, and it says to be continued, it kind of takes away from the fact that it's just a one shot. It's like they knew it was going to be more, but they didn't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
If this was number zero, I'd love this last page. And so we'll go into it. Basically, this is setting up for the future story. And as we find out, this is the for the first mini series of The Occultist. Originally, that they wanted to do this as a starting off point to go into the miniseries, but of course they wanted, I understand that they wanted to perhaps see if there's a readership for it and if it would sell. So that's probably why they just did the one shot. But still, it's a very small nitpick. It doesn't ruin it for me at all. So here we have Aiden Beck standing in his penthouse in L.A. The sword has evaded me once again, he says. It has chosen a bear, and so I have called upon magicians, street mages, assassins. And there inside his living room is hit mages, and he wants them to kill the occultist. And we have a ragtag bunch, including what looks like, I guess we have to start at the beginning, a hippie who's crystal oriented. He's standing there center stage, topless, with a what looks like a peace symbol and crystals coming out of his shoulders and elbows. Right behind him, we have a blaxploitation. You know what I mean? Like just the huge afro. It seems very much like the 70s vibe. How would you describe that? Am I off?
I mean that's how I describe her, but I'd also just call I just call her Pandora.
Pandora is probably best. We don't find out who she is until later on, though. This is
Because you just
just
look at the
the
box
one shot.
and just that's the first assumption.
Oh, is that a box? Oh, I thought that was a book. Ah, good eye, man. And behind her is a large oaf of a man, very much like a druid, I think would be the appropriate way, a giant druid. We have a female Michael Jackson. Or either it's if Michael and Carmen San Diego had a child. Is that
It
is that
does.
fair to
He does look
say?
that way. It's fair.
We have another woman, a card, a guy wearing a leather jacket, a man with a patch. I am really curious about that guy.
Bond.
It looks like, yeah, exactly, a magic bond, and a woman with snakes. So yeah, this actually overall, all fun aside, I really like the idea of having a bunch of street mages or assassins, hit mages, and it brings us to the next issue of The Occultist. So that is the first issue of the one shot Occultist, back in released in December 2010. So what did you think?
It's a great setup. I mean, I never got, I didn't say it, but I also did feel the same way about that ending. Like they could have easily taken that whole page, maybe gone into the first issue where I don't even want to, I don't want to spoil the first issue, but just put that somewhere into the first issue, just to, in the beginning of that first issue, just to understand what's going on. How you get from here to how you get from where it starts, from where this issue ends to where it starts, jumping straight into the action.
And then that's exactly it. It, like, in the next issue, not to give anything away, it really brings you right into the action, just opening it up from the gate.
Yep.
Like, the first page is action packed, mind you. I do think, yeah. But the next page, it does show us that we go back in time. A lot happens right off the bat.
Certainly does.
So yeah. So overall, a great issue. I had a lot of fun reading it. I was really happy to pick up the next issues and continue along with the story. I found it was a great introduction or origin to who the occultist, aka Rob Abraham Bailey, is. And I think that it gives us a fresh look on a character that, even though is quite similar to what other characters are, or basically a mash of other characters, it still it seems fresh and new. Any last words?
Just that with this Skyman one shot that just came out recently, you definitely anticipate to see the occultist soon, especially with things going on with Black Sky, with heroes now becoming more apparent in the world. You definitely want to see where he fits in, especially when others seem to have gotten a bit more of that step forward as to their purpose. You definitely want to see where Rob fits, who is obviously after him, how he's going to deal with this, what more he's capable of. So yeah.
I think that it would great to introduce him again. In the Ghost would be a good avenue, because she's dealing with the magical side of, or the spiritual side of, the Project Black Sky shared world. So it wouldn't be far-fetched, or wouldn't be as jolting as seeing him appear in Captain Midnight, for instance.
Not at all.
Excellent. So that was our first episode of the Project Black Sky podcast. I hope it was as informative as it was fun, and I hope it was as fun as it was informative. So along with this, my name is Moise, and here is my co-host.
Jadobi.